Welcome to this latest Fraser Valander podcast. My name is Kate Milne and I'm an economist here at the Institute. Today I'm joined by Professor Marius Bowage, our director, and David Iser, the deputy director of the Institute, to discuss yesterday's autumn statement. So to start off, over to you, David. What were the main takeaways from yesterday's autumn statement?
Well, I think the big things were, you know, it was just a really huge deterioration in the economic outlook compared to earlier this year. And that fed through to a really huge deterioration in the outlook for the public finances. So compared to earlier this year, the deficit has increased by over 50 billion in each of the next few years, just simply because the economic outlook has got so much worse. The economy is growing less quickly, so that implies revenues coming in lower, and interest rates are higher, and that means the costs of servicing the government's debts have increased a lot. So that was the kind of takeaway on the sort of context, was that the economic outlook and therefore the fiscal outlook had got a whole lot worse. And to deal with that, well, what Jeremy Hunt did really was he didn't actually sort of tighten things up in 2023 or 2024. He left that tightening to the later part of the forecast period because the outlook is so bad. He essentially couldn't risk taking too much out of public spending or increasing taxes too much next year. So what he basically announced in the autumn statement was some additional tax rises for 2023-24, which will fund some additional resource spending. But really, he's letting borrowing take most of the flak for this deterioration in the economic and fiscal outlook and the costs associated with the energy price guarantee, and sort of leaving the difficult decisions to later on in the forecast period. But even then, you know, he's not taking as much out of spending in the later part of the forecast period as some people thought he might. And he's only just meeting his fiscal targets right at the end of the five-year period, just by the skin of his teeth, and almost certainly in practice, you know, probably won't actually meet those fiscal targets when it comes to it. Takeaways were huge deterioration in the economic outlook and therefore the fiscal outlook, but nonetheless letting borrowing deal with most of that, certainly while we get through the crisis and get beyond the next UK election.
So a lot to take in there. Were there any surprises, do you think, yesterday, Mary?
Well, I don't think we've ever had a fiscal event so well trailed in terms of most of the announcements that were likely to be made. And even the briefing that came out the morning of the autumn statement was very detailed in terms of the detail of the announcements. So in the sort of aggregate and the overall approach, I suppose, you know, there wasn't that many surprises. But in the detail, I suppose there were some for me. One surprise was looking into the detail of the OBR's forecast. And I suppose the different view that the OBR have about the evolution of the economy after this period that we're entering into of recession, and how quickly the economy might kind of bounce back. The OBR are much more optimistic about that than the Bank of England were when they published their forecast at the beginning of November. Now, the bank did say, you know, we don't yet know what the announcements are going to be on the 17th of November, and perhaps we'll take a different view, you know, once we see what the announcements have been. But you know, they're quite irreconcilable about how quickly and how fervently the economy might power back after the recession. They also have quite a different view of where unemployment might top out after the recession, or as part of as going through recession, and they think it'll be a much lower level than the Bank of England do. Other surprises, I suppose, in terms of, you know, when Jeremy Hunt was standing up in the chamber and announcing things, I hadn't heard the electric vehicles coming into the scope of vehicle excise duty before. So that was a bit of a surprise measure. And I suppose this is a quite a long-term conversation about how the government might need to think about reforming the taxes on vehicles and fuel and these sorts of things over the longer term as we move away from petrol vehicles. And obviously the use of petrol overall, because fuel duty is a very big tax for the government. It does raise a lot of money. So, you know, what that will mean in the future for the way that the government raises revenues as the transport system is decarbonized is quite an interesting question. So that was a particular surprise. And again, as David mentioned, obviously, we were expecting the Chancellor to present new fiscal rules because the old fiscal rules, which are currently legislated for, didn't look to be achievable. So the currently legislated ones are that debt would be falling by year three of the forecast. The new one is that it will be falling as a percentage of GDP by year five of the forecast. And also that there would be a current budget balance. And instead, the Chancellor's now saying that the borrowing will be under 3% of GDP. By again year five of the forecast. I guess I was a bit surprised that he's only just meeting those fiscal rules, you know, and there's kind of very little wiggle room therefore, potentially for, you know, say the March forecast, depending on what happens in the next few months, which is obviously quite uncertain. So I was surprised that he was meeting it by such a small margin. Because if you look in the detail of the OBR documents, there's quite a few risks to the forecast that they're pointing out. Things like the current forecast assume there'll be a huge increase in fuel duty in March, you know, raising an additional almost £6 billion. Basically, in polite OBR language, they're essentially saying in their document, they don't think this is actually going to happen. So this extra revenue will not materialise. Also, that there may need to be other one-off interventions to help households, businesses through this difficult period as energy prices continue to rise, albeit that they're still capped, but at a higher level. So these are the sorts of surprises I thought in the detail of the forecast, which we'll kind of see how things evolve. But yeah, I was really surprised that there was so little headroom that the Chancellor had against his own new fiscal rules.
So just on that note, on your point about the OBR's forecast, do you think that the autumn statement has done enough to ease the long recession that lies ahead? David, do you want to take that one?
I think the government had a balance here, didn't it? It had to support the economy and households through this period of recession that we're just going into, but at the same time, it had to take into account the significantly weakened position of the public finances. And I think, you know, to be fair, what Jeremy Hunt did is he really did push back the sort of fiscal sustainability issues into the later part of the forecast period, and you put significant emphasis on the recovery and support side of that in the next year or two. And so I think there was a lot there. The government is doing a lot on that, supporting the households side of things in that context. Of course, benefits are being uprated by inflation, which there would have been a huge outcry if the government didn't do that. But of course, it was under pressure, certainly from within the party, perhaps to look at that and do something a bit less than uprating benefits by inflation. Huge investment in the energy price guarantee this year, over 70 billion, and then tens of billions again next year. The energy price guarantee next year is not as generous as this year, but again, it's about getting the balance. And there's a mix of that energy price guarantee, which benefits everybody, and then still quite a bit of targeted support in place for households on means tested benefits, disability benefits, and pensioners. So, you know, I think to be fair, there is a lot in there. to support households through this inflationary period, in this recessionary period. But, you know, clearly we're still having this unprecedented squeeze on living standards over the next couple of years. Unprecedented even in the context of the sort of post-financial crisis period. We often talk about what happened after the financial crisis, sort of between 2008 and 2012 as being an unprecedented period for declining household incomes and declining living standards. But, you know, on the basis of the forecasts that the OBR put out yesterday, the next couple of years are even worse for living standards. So could the government have done more? Well, it could have done, but only by, you know, further increases to the existing deficit over the next couple of years, which, you know, it felt that it had gone far enough on, basically.
Yeah, I think this period is one where we're going to have to stop using words like unprecedented and come up with new words that actually mean that, because we've said it a lot over the last few years with COVID and now this, but yeah, strange times indeed.
Yeah, definitely. So just on your note of the fact that households are really going to be feeling the squeeze, what sort of support was announced yesterday in terms of businesses and charities? Because as households continue to feel that squeeze, you know, but businesses and charities have had a really rough last couple of years. And have they felt the support?
Yes, it's really interesting because obviously alongside the Energy Price Guarantee being announced initially by Liz Truss in September when she came into office, there was also support for businesses announced at the same time. And we have to remember that as well as businesses, there are lots of other organisations who hadn't been protected by any sort of price cap over the period of rising prices from, you know, the summer of 2021, which was exacerbated hugely when Russia invaded Ukraine, of course. So these sorts of organisations, and they are small businesses, large businesses, but they're also charitable organisations, have been exposed to huge increases in their energy costs, which are really threatening quite a few operations, many of which deliver vital services. So these organisations obviously welcome this sort of cap on energy prices that they're currently enjoying up to the end of March. But there was nothing further announced for these organisations, businesses or otherwise, in terms of support with energy bills. There was some measures which are relevant for England on business rates. So reliefs on retail, hospitality and leisure businesses, for example, and also a freeze in the sort of poundage rate instead of being uprated. Now, you know, that doesn't apply in Scotland, but I imagine there'll be pressure on the Scottish government to do something similar in Scotland. But apart from that, there was very little by way of support for businesses. So obviously the energy prices are very volatile and we're not really sure what the position will be in April. But I imagine a lot of businesses are quite concerned about their viability if energy prices are going to go up by some of the kind of eye-watering multiples that we heard of before this support for businesses was announced in September.
And also a further bleak outlook for all. So last point today, just looking at what implications for Scotland from yesterday's statement.
Shall I start on that one then? So I think, I mean, this was a budget or an autumn statement that was one of those ones where most of the measures apply sort of UK wide in terms of, you know, the sorts of tax increases, the energy price guarantee and so on. But there are a couple of important implications for Scotland, one on income tax and the other on departmental spending. So the one on income tax was, of course, this decision by the UK government to reduce the threshold at which taxpayers become liable for the additional rate which is 45p in the rest of the UK. It's 46p in Scotland. Now, that won't apply in Scotland because income tax is devolved, and it'll be up to the Scottish Government to decide when it sets its budget for 23-24 whether it wants to follow on that. Now, if it does decide to follow, if it reduces the what's called the top rate in Scotland, basically the additional rate from 150,000 as it is now to 125,000, that will probably bring in up to about 12,000 additional people into that top rate of tax in Scotland, raise maybe around £40 million of additional revenue. Of course, the Scottish Government doesn't have to do that exactly. It could not do that at all, or it could do any number of other policies. There's a sort of techie point, which is that the way the fiscal framework works means that even if the Scottish Government follows the UK government's policy and reduces that threshold, the Scottish Government will, as a result, see its tax revenues increase, but not by as much as the deduction to its block grant that comes about because of the increase in the UK government's revenues as a result of doing that policy. And that's basically because the UK government has got proportionately far more additional rate taxpayers, and there's a what you might call a quirk in the way the fiscal framework works, which means that even if the Scottish government implements the same tax policy, it will raise additional revenue, but might nonetheless see that offset by a higher deduction from its block grant. So that's the sort of tax implications. Then on the spending implications, what the Chancellor announced yesterday was extra departmental spending on NHS and schools in England, and that generates consequential for the Scottish government's budget. Basically about £1 billion next year, 23-24, and £800 million the year after. Now there's a question about whether that increase in resource funding for the Scottish government, that's a big increase in cash terms, but of course there's been a huge increase in inflation since this time last year, when the Scottish government set out its budget and when it had the numbers that it used to underpin its multi-year spending review earlier this year. So an interesting question is, well, do these additional consequentials for next year and the year after offset the rise, the effects of the rise in inflation? And the answer depends a bit on how you decide to measure inflation. But if you measure it the way it's normally measured, then yes, just about that additional funding means that the Scottish budget in 23-24 and 24-25 is about the same in real terms as the Scottish government thought it was going to be when it set out its multi-year spending review. But the Scottish government may argue that that normal way of measuring inflation is not the best way of measuring inflation at the moment. And if you measure inflation in a slightly different way, you could argue that even after those additional consequentials come along, the real term Scottish resource block grant will be a bit less next year and the year after than the Scottish government thought it was going to be when it set out its multi-year spending review. So it's a yes, good news that the Scottish government's budget was topped up, but only just. Even if you take a sort of relatively conservative view about what inflation has been, it's only just sort of offsetting the impacts of inflation.
And this discussion about which inflation measure you should use has been well covered in recent documents by the OBR and the Fiscal Commission in Scotland. And it's a kind of unhelpful techie point, but it is really important. So if listeners are interested in reading a bit more about it, David's set it out in our blog that we published yesterday alongside the Autumn Statement to try and explain the different measures of inflation and why normally we would use the what's called the GDP deflator. But at the moment, it's not necessarily a good reflection of the spending pressure on government budgets, because so much of it's been driven by the cost of delivering services, which has been driven by energy costs, but also public sector pay deals. And obviously, if people are thinking about pay and their pay keeping up with inflation, they're looking towards the consumer price index, that, you know, 10.1 or 11.1%, rather than this wider GDP deflator. So it does complicate things, though, and it's not ideal for transparency when different governments can use different numbers depending on which inflation measure they choose.
Great. Well, thank you very much, both Mary and David. There's definitely a lot to consider following the Chancellor's statement yesterday. You can find out more about our research at our website, fraserwylander.org, and we hope to see you again soon for our next Save Fraser Wylander podcast. Thank you.